For more than a decade, Stanford Law Professor Lawrence Lessig has been leading the fight to ease copyright restrictions online, a battle he's waged before the Supreme Court. But recently, he changed direction. He set copyright issues aside in order to devote himself to something else entirely, reducing the influence of money in politics. Until this week, he'd even been weighing a political run of his own for the House seat vacated by the late Silicon Valley Democrat Tom Lantos. But Lessig has decided not to run and instead will focus on building a new organization called Change Congress and also focusing on being a guest on Fair Game. Hi, Lawrence.
Hi, glad to be here.
So after getting all the techie bloggers' glasses fogged up over the notion of a Congressman Lessig, you've decided to hold off. How come?
Well, this is a very short time frame for this election. The special election happens in just over 30 days. And the woman who I would run against, Jackie Speier, is an extremely popular public servant. She's been working for 30 years. And in 30 days, the idea of making the district even aware that I exist and getting them to understand the issue and then connecting the two in a way that leads them to not vote for this extremely popular and I think really she was a great senator would be just too hard. And my fear was, though people in the Valley would recognize nobody could beat Jackie Speier, outside of the Valley, since I wanted to run on this Change Congress idea, people would say, see, this demonstrates the reform movement has no political strength. And so I didn't want to risk that for the beginning of this new movement.
And I read that somebody told you if you decided to run for this April 8th election, you would have to spend 7 hours a day on the phone asking for money.
Well, actually, that was something told to me by Bill Foster, and he's running in the seat being vacated by Dennis Hastert. And he described spending, he told me on the phone yesterday, he spends 7 hours a day calling to raise money just to be able to run for Congress.
Your jaw would hurt.
Yeah, no, it's a real waste of human talent.
Why did you decide to change your focus from relaxing copyright laws to getting corruption out of politics? Did you have some epiphanous moment where you're like, I'm done with this, I need to move on?
Yeah, I did. I was actually close friends to the guy who made the film for Al Gore, Inconvenient Truth. And there was this moment where I kind of recognized that the problems that I was fighting in copyright were not conceptually hard problems, yet the government constantly got it wrong. And the same thing about global warming. The basic science was known and understood, and they were getting it wrong for the same reason. Money was screwing up the policymaking process such that good people in Congress couldn't do the right thing because they couldn't afford to do the right thing, or they couldn't afford to do the right thing in the way that they thought they needed to raise money to get elected. And so as you saw that connection, I began to look at a whole host of other issues where public policy was, it's not just that there were hard questions that they turned out to be wrong. These were easy questions that the government got wrong. For example, the United States government tries to push the idea that 25% of your calories, your kids' calories, can come from sugars, which is totally insane from any perspective of nutrition, mm-hmm. but comes because the sugar industry has so much power in the FDA's Food Nutrition Board. So just as an alcoholic, you know, might be losing his job and losing his wife and losing his liver, and each of those is really important problems, until he solves his alcoholism, he's not going to solve any of those other problems. And that's the same thing here. It's not that it's the most important problem. It's just the first problem. And if we don't solve this, then really fundamental issues like global warming and nutrition and what we do about our schools and all of these issues will not be solved. And so that's why I wanted to focus on this first.
Now, the stated goal of your new political organization, Change Congress, is to fill Congress with people opposed to lobbying and earmarks. And so you would be such a good start.
Yeah, well, I hope that I can actually inspire lots of great starts. The basic idea is to try to get people to pledge to reform platforms, both Republicans and Democrats, and to begin to fill over two or three election cycles enough people in the House and Senate that there was a real opportunity to make change. And I think there's an extraordinary amount of excitement around this and a lot of people who are interested in, ironically, funding it to get it going. So I'm very optimistic that we'll be able to show something. I'm hoping by March 20th we'll be making our beta launch.
Okay, so fine. I guess the best we're going to get from you for now in terms of politics was the time Christopher Lloyd played you on The West Wing. Were you happy with that casting, by the way?
I love Christopher Lloyd, but it was very funny. They told me they tried to cast someone age-appropriate, and all of the research showed that nobody would believe somebody my age actually was doing what he was portraying me to do. But it was actually based on a true story.
You're a Doogie Howser.
Sort of, I guess. Not as
Sorry, go ahead with the true story.
Yeah, so when I started working in constitutional law, I did a lot with the Republic of Georgia and was involved in helping them to draft their constitution and actually ran a drafting convention in Chicago where we brought all the drafters over to get them to draft it. So the story was actually based on that. But having a 30-something guy involved in drafting the Georgian constitution just didn't seem appropriate in the White House, I guess.
Are you feeling hopeful that that the ideas of change Congress will be embraced by both sides of the aisle equally? What's your sense of that so far?
Well, in fact, the components to this proposal, so one of them is that you give up lobbyist and PAC money. Number two, that you support an abolition of earmarks. And number three, that you support public financing of campaigns. The components are actually components both Republicans and Democrats support. But what I'm most fearful of is the difference not between Republicans and Democrats, but insiders and outsiders, because all three of these would radically change really the power of incumbency, right? When you're right now, an incumbent is literally a 99% reelection rate. Well, if you had public financing of campaigns, that would change. If you didn't have the power of earmarks, that would change. If you didn't take lobbyist money and PAC money, then you'd really have to appeal to the people, and that would have a significant change. And so what I fear most is that both Democrats and Republicans on the inside would not want to embrace reforms that actually make it harder for them to stay on the inside.
Lawrence, we have to take a break, so please hang on.
Sure.
In a minute, I want to get your thoughts on the role money's played in this year's presidential nominating process. Also coming up, Sharon Mottola, the Dr. Doolittle of Belize. I'm Faith Saley, and this is Fair Game from PRI. I'm Faith Saley, and this is Fair Game from PRI. I'm talking with Stanford University law professor and internet guru Lawrence Lessig about his new crusade to get money out of politics. I was kind of tickled to read that part of the inspiration for your copyright work came from the Gipper. How did Reagan influence you?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things Reagan was always focused on was the ways in which government could be corrupted. Reagan, in 1965, Reagan gives this very interesting radio address where he talks about how, you know, once people recognize that they can vote themselves, money, you know, then democracy always fails because they raid the treasury by, you know, the majority voting all of themselves money. And I think Reagan had it half right. I mean, I think that democracy is threatened, but it's not the poor people who have somehow gotten together and stolen the treasury. What's really gone on is that the very people Reagan was trying to inspire and the very interests that he in some sense was defending, the free market interests, have found that the most profitable place to turn to earn their money is by corrupting government in exactly this way. So, you know, I look at institutions like the Federal Communications Commission, which was set up in the 1930s for the sole purpose of protecting telecommunications companies and at that time, first phone companies and then radio also was part of it. And it becomes a kind of regulation designed to create the opportunity for politicians to raise money from the people they regulate. And it's designed to channel political influence in ways that benefit the most powerful, most successful companies in the economy. And you look at this and you say, what would Ronald Reagan say about this? And I think what he would say is that we should blow the FCC up, or at least most of it up. We should get rid of this government regulation that is doing nothing more than creating an opportunity for powerful interests to leverage the power of government to benefit themselves in a way that they couldn't do in the free market. So I think that there's a union, actually, in a between left and right. I'm not a right winger. I'm a proud liberal, proud progressive. But I think there's actually a union in recognizing the source of this problem, and the source of the problem is a system that doesn't know how to say to the most affluent and the most connected, shame on you.
Let's talk Barack Obama. You've come out in support of him. And in November, he pledged to, quote, aggressively pursue an agreement with the Republican nominee to preserve a publicly financed general election. But now that he's been able to generate this tidal wave of fundraising, he pulled in $36 million in January alone. He's been a little less aggressive, shall we say, about that pledge. And in fact, his campaign spokesman recently said there is no pledge. So since, you know, publicly financed elections are so important to you, are you pressing for Obama to abide by his pledge if he becomes a nominee?
I'm really conflicted about this, and I'll be the first to admit, because I'm so strongly supporting Barack. I think what Barack has shown us is an image of a publicly financed campaign that nobody was thinking about when we first thought about it. You know, they've got just about 1 million people now who've contributed to the campaign. I think 10% of them have maxed out, which means they actually, you know, have an extraordinary number of people who will continue to be able to make small contributions to support this campaign. And from anybody's perspective, I think you've got to look at that and say, wow, this is really the greatest image of how a democracy should work. I love the image of public financing where the public is actually financing
but,
and not
special
interests.
But let me ask you this about that. I mean, he does, yes, he's claiming close to 1 million grassroots donors, which is huge, but that's still a very small part of our population. That's a third of 1% of Americans. So should those people, generous as they are, involved as they are, be wielding such outsized influence?
Oh, certainly they should. When you're talking about 1 million people, you're talking about an extraordinary diversity of America. And you're right, it's a small proportion of America, but it just happens to be the biggest number of people ever to contribute in this way. And again, contribute in the small way. I think last I heard, it was Hillary's something like 80 or 90% of Hillary's contributions were contributors were maxed out. I mean, it's a radically different type of contribution. Mm-hmm. And I think that's extraordinarily exciting. And we should not lose sight of the really fundamental fact here that somehow a candidate has cracked through what has traditionally been an impossible barrier, which is to inspire people to give money to a politician to run for president. That's amazing.
Yeah, Obama has outspent Hillary on TV advertising in Wisconsin, something like 3 or 4 to 1.
Wow.
So do you think that the fact that he has so many small grassroots donors, in your mind, does that sort of mitigate the fact that you could say his huge money advantage distorts the nomination process?
I don't believe in distortion in the sense of people speaking too much. You know, we spend so much money in America on advertising, you know, soap, and it's a fraction of that amount that we spend advertising for political candidates, and especially the president. So I don't think our problem is we have too much speech. I don't think we have enough speech. So I'm not worried about that. I think the thing to be concerned about is when there's a disproportionate influence on one particular candidate. It's not really so likely to think that special interests are going to directly control how the president of the United States makes decisions once he or she is in office. But at the level of Congress, I think this is very, very significant. So the fact that a member of Congress commits him or herself to go out and raise money from ordinary people, that changes how they listen and how they do their job and how they communicate. And if that were successful, in fact, if everybody raised money by thinking they needed to find 10,000 members in their district to contribute, then the need for something like public financing in the traditional sense of government money being used to support campaigns might disappear.
Lawrence, one final question. You, not long out of law school, you clerked for conservative Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Tell me something about Antonin Scalia that would surprise me. Like, is he a hugger?
No, he's not a hugger.
Does he watch Days of Our Lives? Tell me something.
Well, he's a great squash player, which looking at him, you might not think. But
that is surprising.
He's a great squash player, yeah.
Thank you. That's good to know. Lawrence, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm really grateful for the time. Thank you.
Lawrence Lessig is a law professor at Stanford University and the founder of a new organization dedicated to getting the money out of politics called Change Congress. For more about him, please visit our website, morefairgame.org.